Hello, hello, and welcome to Pack It Up, Pack It In. I'm back, but this time it's with a twist. I'm going to be interviewing those who have packed in a conventional life route. We're saying goodbye to the 9-to-5s, hello to pursuing your lifelong dream, whatever that may be. Each week, I'm interviewing those who I felt personally inspired by to learn more about their journey, how they got started, and where they're at now. So without further ado, let's get into this week's episode. Welcome to Pack It Up, Pack It In. On today's show, I have a lovely friend of mine, the amazing Colette Cooper. She is an absolute rock star. She's had an amazing career, both in acting and singing. She's done her own solo play about Janis Joplin. Her voice is incredible. So welcome to the show, Colette Cooper.
Thank you, darling. I've got to say, you know, I'm a big fan of your podcast, Pack It Up, Pack It In. It's just a genius. I love it. And I followed it, you know, when you were away for all those months. Felt like I was on holiday with you.
We were just saying before we got recording, we've known each other for maybe a year and a half. We formally met via Southern Comfort. Fun fact, Janis Joplin's favourite drink was Southern Comfort.
Absolutely.
Then we had the pleasure of meeting each other. But what I found interesting looking into your career is that I never really knew where you started off and how you got started. So in the nature of Pack It Up, Pack It In, what were you doing originally before you moved down to London? And how did you kind of take the first steps in your career?
I guess I've always kind of acted from an early age, as a like sort of late teens. And I mean, I went over to New Zealand to do a couple of films and TV series. In fact, I was in Jane Campion's first film. Brilliant film.
What age were you when you started off? Were you acting in school and then you realized?
Yeah, I was. I was acting in school. And, you know, I did the usual school plays and musicals, and I did it for a laugh, really. You know, I was always the class clown and
class entertainer.
I was a class entertainer. Exactly. And I was always someone who I'd be invited to parties. So I'd entertain people somehow or another. And then I was part of a group who formed a theatre company called the Premier Theatre Company, and we travelled all around everywhere. And it was actually the first theatre company, I believe, that was did theatre and education. So we took, you know, all the went from the school curriculums to what was on the school curriculum, like, you know, all the Shakespeare plays and the English curriculum. And so we toured with all the Shakespeare plays, and then we did moral-based plays like anti-drugs, anti-bullying, anti-racism, and they were really, really popular. And I did that.
And what made you go to New Zealand?
Well, I packed it up and packed it in and went over there. You know, I was young. I wanted to travel. I wanted to go traveling. I wanted to see the world. That was far more important to me than being ambitious in a career. Well, what was important to me then, you know, was, and still is collecting memories, you know, creating memories of, you know, this, because you've been out traveling. I wanted to see the world, and I was happy to do anything from waitressing to, I mean, when I went out to New Zealand, I was even a clown for children's parties at one point. I was literally a clown with my friend. And we started this little company where we'd go around and do kids' parties and be clowns. It was great.
And amazing.
We were illegal immigrants in New Zealand, and we just wanted to stay. And I remember things like we worked in this restaurant, and we to get the job, we told the owner that we were chefs in the Ritz in London. I couldn't even boil an egg, let alone say I was a chef. So we completely lied. He gave us the job. And of course, the amount of complaints that week in the restaurant was unbelievable. People were sending all the foods back, saying, I didn't order pizza. Well, it wasn't a pizza. It was actually an omelette. Anyway, I was like, well, what, we need to work. And I wanted to stay in New Zealand. I thought, well, I'm an actor, you know, I should be. So I found an agent, Graham. He was English as well. And I started doing lots of acting over there. And again, I packed it up and packed it in and came back to the UK and came to London and kind of went from there. And I singing at that point was just, it was more, I'll tell you what, I can do a bit of singing. I didn't really know I had a good voice at that stage. My parents sang for fun, and my brother, professional musician, lives in Canada. So he was always the musician in the family. I was the actor. And even though I'd done a couple, you know, a few musicals at school and stuff, but, you know, musicals aren't my thing, really. And then I started doing a bit of singing. I did some busking at college with my friend Melissa as well to make a bit of money. And people used to say, you've got a great voice, you should sing. And so, yeah, I just started singing in between jobs. And I just thought, you know, I like this. I'm quite good at this. I should do this as well. And I was always into music growing up because, my, you know, my dad had bought me for my 9th birthday some keyboards. So I was always, you know, tinkling around on the keyboards, having a sing song. But I didn't know if I could make a profession out of it.
Was it hard getting started in London?
I did have a few friends here. I mean, I'm a northerner, so I'm friendly. I gravitate to other kind of, you know, people like you. You know, you kind of find your people. And I just started, in terms of singing, I just started first singing in a couple of pubs and got a band together. And then I started writing. And then I was just really lucky. I'd started getting offered some really big stuff and then kind of went from there. And then I was lucky enough to make money from it, you know, because it's very difficult to make money from art nowadays, you know. I was lucky enough to make money from it.
What was your first big break in London?
I don't know, really. I mean, because when I come to London, I'd already done things. I'd already done, like, quite a bit of TV. I was in Coronation Street.
Explain how you got into that.
My family were ecstatic. I mean, I could say to my family, hey, listen, I'm going to be in a film with Tom Cruise. And they go, oh, right, okay, great. But as soon as I said, I'm going to be in Coronation Street.
That's like reaching your peak.
They're like, you know, it's such a big thing up north, Coronation Street.
Also in Ireland, I followed it religiously.
And actually, it's got a massive fan base in Canada and places like that, and in parts of America, massive fan base. So, you know, I did quite a lot of TV and stuff, but I just think, and films and things and that, but my roots are theatre. Every time I did a gig, there was always somebody, or there was always a review, there was always something that said, you're very like, you're like the British Janis Joplin. And I didn't really know who Janis Joplin was. I'd heard of her, but I didn't know anything about her. And I remember I Googled her and I was like, oh, Janis Joplin, I want to know more about her. And I remember thinking at the time, I was a bit disappointed. I was like, what? I'm not like her. She's a rocker. She's this. And even though I thought she was brilliant, but I was a little bit like a bit insulted in a way. God, forgive me, Janis. At the time I was, because I was, she was never one of my musical influences growing up. So I was a little bit like, what? And then I realized it was a huge compliment. And when I look now, and when I decided to, because there was a West End producer, he'd come to see me with a friend, and I was doing a gig at the 100 Club, and they said, you should play Janis Joplin. And I thought, well, I'd heard this so many times. I was like, they'd say, the main thing was, you're a little bit like Janis Joplin meets Edith Piaf, or Edith Piaf meets Janis Joplin, one or the other. Anyway, so I thought, I'd always wanted to combine my acting with my singing, but I didn't want to do a musical as such, because that wasn't, musicals aren't really my thing, but I wanted to do something where it was like a gig play. And I thought, you know what? I think I could play her. I'm going to give it a bash. So I did all the research for a couple of years. I did loads of research on her, and me and my partner, Mike, sat down and we said, and Mike was like, I'm going to produce this. I think you could smash this. And I the more I found out about Janis, the more research I did, I realized how similar we were in many areas, not just like energy and vocally, because we both got sort of loud, big, husky voices. I saw politically, socially, everything, we were similar. And we had the same musical influencer, which was Bessie Smith. You know, I adored Bessie Smith. The Bessie Smith was someone my dad introduced me to as a little girl, and I just fell in love with her ballsiness, her rawness. You know, she had such a raw voice. So when I realized, okay, you know, we're very similar on so many levels, just in our movements, our body movements, our energy, I thought, right, I'm going to write this biog about her. So I did all the research, and I wanted to fit it into an hour and a half in a play driven by music, which is set in a Woodstock vibe festival, and backstage in her dressing room, where we tell the story, or, you know, I tell the story of her life through the Southern Comfort bottle, as you know. And And then it, beyond our wildest dreams, it did really, really, really well. We won awards, you know, got great 5-star reviews and the audience seemed to love it. They were coming back 4, 5, 6 times. So we thought we had to pursue this and get it on a bigger stage, which is what we're doing next year.
You mentioned earlier that the industry has completely changed from when you started. You felt that you were lucky in the sense that opportunities were kind of in abundance when you did start. Why do you think it's changed so much?
Oh, it has, definitely. I mean, I think, you know, when I started out acting and stuff, you know, and did a lot of theatre and did TV and film. And just to say as well, I was somebody who never liked going up for auditions, and I still don't. I like to do my own thing. I've come to a stage, an age and a stage in my life and career where I just want to write and do my own things, whether that's theatre, whether I write a TV series, which I'm planning to do with a good friend of mine, Nikid. We're planning on that. I'd rather use all my talents I have. You know, if I can do a bit of writing, then I'd like to do that as well. I want to do my own thing. I don't really want to do other people's things. I want to just do my own thing. But it definitely has, because there's so, as you'll know, there's so many platforms now, you know, TV, you've got Amazon, then you've got all the platforms that are attached to Amazon, like Now TV, like this TV, that TV. I can't even name them all. There's so many platforms, and you've got Netflix. And again, there's just so Sky, you've got all these platforms. When we were growing up, you know, we just had 5 channels, you know, do you remember that? And then all of a sudden you've got all these platforms and the industry feels a little bit saturated as well. So there's all these huge, big TV series that are being made. There's so many platforms, you don't get to see them. So sadly, all these amazing actors that are coming through, and they're not established yet, and they're doing all these incredible stuff, and they're super talented, probably don't have that opportunity to really shine as much as they did 10, 20 years ago, because it's saturated. There's so, and that's the same with music. You've got all these streaming platforms. And again, I'd love the music union to go on strike as well, because you've got all these music platforms now, which has changed music for life, because, you know, Spotify, unless you are Beyonce, Adele, Ed Sheeran, Rihanna, Lady Gaga, unless you're up there with them, you're not going to make money on Spotify. You're just not, because you have to have millions of views before you get £10. And Spotify are earning billions from some subscriptions, and grassroots artists, or not even just the grassroots, but artists in the middle like me, you know, it's like you're not earning that money. So I don't tend to try and use these free platforms, because I want to make money from my art. So I use iTunes, where I can sell my music, and I use even Bandcamp still. And I make vinyls, and I'll sell through my website. And I suggest most artists do that.
But isn't it interesting that there's more opportunity to get your music out there?
It's watered down, though. There is, and that's a great thing. Anybody now can make a song, make a record. And that's amazing. You don't have to rely on big record labels. You know, we've got our own little record label. You don't have to rely on a big record label. You can do it all yourself, but it's hard work. But at the same time, they're still not getting the money and recognition they deserve because of the amount of streaming platforms. But it has changed. The industry has really, really changed, which makes me want to pack it in and pack it up and
go elsewhere,
go and open a beautiful dog farm. I'd love that.
It's great. There's, as you said, there's so many different platforms. But to your point, it is very competitive and it is a tough market. What advice would you give to someone today if they came to you and said, Claire, I think I've got a good voice. I think I'm good at acting. Where do I start?
Well, I would say if it's a passion, you've got to do it. Like I started off, it was just a passion. It wasn't about fame. I hate fame. We did it for the craft, for the passion. And we wanted, you know, I wanted to do it. It wasn't about anything else. You know, there is that side of things today where people are so hungry for fame. It's not about the craft. It's not about the passion. They just want to be famous. So they'll take whatever avenue. But I think if you've got a genuine talent, and I think you've got to keep working at it, and it will shine through. And I think especially for actors, I think learn your craft. I'd do as much theatre. I'd do it yourself, write it yourself, do whatever it takes. I would start that way and get, you know, get a good agent that suits you. That's always not easy. You know, that's not easy, but just keep going. Focus on the craft. Even if you don't have an agent, you've got to focus on the craft itself. So go and do performance art wherever you can. Go and do it. There's lots of small little theatres out there. Write something, do it. Just keep going, keep going. The same with music and singing. Just keep going. Go and find it. Again, like these big things like X Factor and Britain's Got Talent. You know, there's a lot of artists that go on there. They've never done a gig in their life. But they think that is the be all and end all. And if they don't make it on X Factor, then they've got to give up. And they're crying. I mean, I remember watching it once. People are crying because they've been turned down. They're going, sorry, you know, we're not going to take this. My life's over. I'm like, your life's over. What? Because X Factor said, no, get yourself out there. Go in a pub, go and busk. It's got enough. That isn't the be all and end all. You've got to find ways to do it. Don't rely on these big things.
I love that approach. You know, if you get a no, take that as one no and like look for the yes. Yeah.
I mean, the amount of rejections we have in life in general. I mean, I've rejected left, right, and center, but you don't. That's just one person's opinion. And also, it's like you can't, whatever you do, you can't expect everybody to love it. So you just got to do what you want to do. Please yourself. Do what you want to do as an artist. And if people like it, even if one person likes it, well, then that's great.
You know? And how did you cope ever when you, and I suppose you might have changed because I certainly have, when I was younger, coping with rejection as to now, like, how did you cope and how do you feel like you cope with it now? Because now you know exactly who you are. You've succeeded and you've got an audience and you don't care how big or small that is. You know you've done you. But I think when you're starting off, there's this horrible, like, you get rejected, you're like...
It's horrible. It's true. I mean, there's an old saying with actors as well. It's like, you can get 100 great reviews. You can do a play and get 100 great reviews. You might get one bad review or, you know, or not as good. Actors will tend to focus on that one bad review, right? They just do. And it makes me laugh because every actor I know does that a lot. They'll go, oh, but I said, yeah, but you've just got, you know, 25 star reviews. What are you worried about the 3-star one for? Yeah, but they, you know, don't focus on that. I tend not to read any reviews at all, good or bad. I just don't bother because it's always someone's opinion, whether it's a great opinion they have of you, whether someone's saying you're amazing, you're this, you're that, or whether someone's saying you're a pile of shit. I personally, like I said, don't read reviews because it's lovely when people are saying you're wonderful and this, and it's always heartbreaking if someone said, well, you're not my cup of tea. It's just someone's opinion, whether it's good or bad. And I just think you've just got to follow your own heart. I think with anyone young and who's starting off, it's going to be very vulnerable and sensitive because let's face it, anybody in the entertainment industry is sensitive and vulnerable and we take things to heart. I think it's a really good advice not to give a shit what people think. And I've got to a stage in my life, I really don't care what people think.
It seems like your personality, you've always had that because you put your craft first and your passion first.
Yeah.
But was that because your parents, you were from a musical background, you were kind of encouraged from an early age?
Well, it's funny, actually. No, I wasn't encouraged, actually, at an early age, really, because I was one of the kids, all the cousins had come over and I'd put on a show. So I was always an entertainer from very, very young. You know, I'd make all the adults sit down, charge them 5p to come and watch the show. And I'd always put on shows. I was always dressing up, putting on characters, impersonating people off the TV. You know, I was always that kind of kid. And at school, I was the same. You know, it was always inevitable I was going to go into some form of entertainment. So I just genuinely just absolutely loved performing on every level. I just loved it. And I remember my dad used to always say, okay, so you want to be an actress, but what else are you going to do? And I go, what do you mean, what else am I going to do? That's what I'm going to do, Dad. Yeah, but what happens if that, you don't manage to do that? What are you going to do? And I was just determined. I was like, I'm not going to do anything else. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to make a career of it somehow. I'm going to do it. And I've just managed to, I haven't become a millionaire or anything, but I've managed to get by,
Yeah. No, it seems like you just had maybe not always a plan, but a focus. What was your biggest pinch me moment throughout your whole career? What was the time where you were like, I've chosen the right path and now everything fits?
I was asked to do a charity gig for a couple of people, actually. But this particular one was Samuel L. Jackson's charity.
Amazing.
And it was with loads of other, well-known established artists. And that was a real pinch me moment. I was like, Samuel L. Jackson's asked me to, that's great. And doing a, singing with him was like...
Did he email you directly?
No, he didn't directly, no. His PR did. And that was a real... That was amazing to be there with Samuel L. Jackson. And ironically, I've got a great funny story for this. So I was in this film called Flim, F-L-I-M, called Flim. It was a comedy. And it was being shown at the Sundance Film Festival. So we went there to the screening because we were being screened. It was a big thing. I mean, photographers were there and all the, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, I went outside for a quick sneaky cigarette and the director, my friend, Raph, he's my friend now, is there outside. There's quite a few other actors and people outside chatting and smoking before we have to go back in. And someone went, "There's Samuel L. Jackson," as he walked past. And I went, "That's Samuel Jackson. I know Samuel L. Jackson. I did his charity recently." And everyone went, "Yeah, right." And I went, "Samuel." And he went, hey, Colette, hi. And I went over and went, hey, and he was in a tracksuit and he was with the lady, his PR lady. And I was like, "How are you?" And I said, "That was great, your charity," with the charity was at Abbey Road and stuff. I said, "That was great, your charity. I had a great time." I said, "You were brilliant." He goes, "I've got a good day job. I'm not going to sing. I've already got a good day job." But that was hilarious. So gave him a hug. He went on. And then as I walked back, everyone was just stood there like this going. And then the director was like, "Why didn't you ask him into the screening?" I was like, but that was really funny.
That's hilarious. Why was he there?
He was just in London. He just happened to be walking past.
What are the chances that Samuel L. Jackson's is going to be walking past?
Can you believe it? And he's so lovely and down to earth. And of course, he's a brilliant actor. But he's one of, he's an actor that I've always admired. He's just got that charisma and that voice that is just amazing. And then, I guess Vivian Westwood as well. That was a great moment. I was asked to sing at her charity. Bless her, God bless her soul. And then I sang, and then one of the PR people came up or whoever and said, "Oh, Vivian would really like to meet you." And I was like, "Oh, great. I've never met her before." I mean, I've got friends who've catwalked for her and met her, and I've never met her before. She's like, "Oh, she'd really like to meet you." And I was like, "Oh, great." And she was hilarious. This is what she said. So I had a suit on, a black suit that I designed, collaborated with Gresham Blake, right? I designed this suit. Well, of course, she makes amazing clothes. So I went up and they said, "Vivian, this is Colette Cooper. She's been singing." And she went, "Oh, I love." First thing she said to me was, "Oh, is that one of mine? One of the suits?" I was like, is that one of my suits?" Yeah, and I went, no. I said, "But because I was going to wear one of your suits." I said, "But I couldn't get out of the dry cleaners in time." I made that up. She was going, "Oh," she said, "well, I've been hearing all these lovely things about you. So I thought I had to meet you." And she goes, "But I'll be honest, I'm not into all this singing and dancing palaver. It's really not my thing. I don't like all that noise. But they said, you should meet Colette and I'd heard nice things. I wanted to meet you. But all that singing and dancing's not my thing. Oh, no. I don't want to stay here too long. It's way too crowded." She was so funny. I couldn't stop. I was like, "Okay."
Oh my God.
And she said, "But we'll have a photo together." And we had this photo, and I've got, got that photo, obviously. And but that was hilarious. But I guess I've had lots of pinch me moments, really. I just think I'm I I just feel grateful every day that I could just do something that I enjoy and that I've made a living out of my music and my art and, you know, the stuff that I like to do. You know, I'd like to be a millionaire though, but whether that happens, I don't know.
Who knows? Once Janis Joplin, tomorrow, maybe my last hits
maybe,
the West End.
Hopefully.
I feel like you've had such a mix. And would you like to still do a bit of acting, or are you kind of solely focused on the music at the minute?
Well, you know, we've got the play next year. We've got the play next year. So I'll definitely be acting then for a good 8 weeks. I'm just at the moment writing a treatment for a TV series I've got an idea for. Well, we've had this idea for quite a while with a good friend of mine, Nick Ead. So who knows, maybe in a couple, you know, a TV series soon. But in terms of acting other than in the play, unless there is a part that comes my way that I think, wow, I really want to play that, then I don't think so, no. Yeah. Because I just want to create my own stuff and I want to focus on my music as well. So
a lot of people are so hesitant to ask for advice because they don't want to come across as amateur.
I think I'm asking advice every day to people who are older, wiser, and been in, you know, in a business longer. I think there's nothing wrong with asking for advice. I think it's good to ask for advice.
What advice would you give your younger self?
I would give some advice to this. I think this is important. And this goes for you as well, because you're very similar to me. You're a very giving person. You're very giving. I think the advice I would give as a whole, I think growing up, and I have been, you know, I'm like a puppy, a Labrador, where I love everyone, like everyone. Everyone's great. This great, but actually not everyone's great. That's what you've got to remember. People will use you. And that's what you've got to remember. And you've got to remember, this is really important. People will take advantage of your good nature. And that's definitely happened to me a lot. They'll take advantage of your good nature and they will use you. And what happens, you should be, I protect your energy more. Protect your energy more, because try not to give out too much of your energy to the wrong people, especially in the entertainment industry. Keep your friends very, very close. I'm not into keeping your enemies closer, because enemies are enemies. They can fuck off, right? But keep your friends very close. Have those really good friends in your life that only want the best for you. That's very, very, very important, because you'll find that a lot of people will gravitate to you because of your talents, because of who you know, because of your energy, and they will use that. That's something you really have to recognize. I learned to recognize that. So I wish I'd learned sooner. And now I'm very, very careful about who I meet with, who I let into my space. I'm really, really careful. I've got some really good friends who I love dearly. And I've had these friends for many, many years, you know, because I've got some friends who are super famous. Okay. And I've had this conversation with them, because I judge people how they treat other people, not just me. So I've seen people treat my super famous friends very differently, like all over them, the sun. I really treat them differently, but then they'll treat people who, the waiter, or who aren't as famous, or like shit. And so I watch that in people. I watch how they treat other people, not just me. You know, let them prove to you that they're good people. And then if they prove good, then they're the keepers, you know.
100%. No, you've been an amazing guest on Pack It In. I loved hearing a bit more about your journey. I think you're a force of nature. I am not surprised by any of your success whatsoever, and you are so humble and down to earth and have time for everyone. So yeah, you're amazing, and thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me. You're amazing. I love you to bits.
Oh, you're the best.
See you soon.